Hi, this is Chico Matsusaka, and welcome to Mission Artist. Today, I'm with Craig Worth, a gentleman who wears many hats. I initially knew him as a fellow certified music practitioner, then got to know him as an amazing musician and singer-songwriter. Currently, he is pastor of Nottingham Community Church in New Hampshire, academic coordinator, faculty advisor at Chaplaincy Institute of Maine. And just so you know, I'm wearing my Maine sweatshirt.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
That's just a few of the things that you do and you have done. So with a standard opening question, would you please share your story of how you arrived at this moment on your path?
All right. Well, can we do this in 47 segments over a 6-month period? I will tell
Absolutely.
You all about my...
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I know it's a big question, but...
No, I appreciate it. Yeah. It's a good challenge to condense the wild. It's not a straight line. None of us are probably in a straight line, right?
Yeah.
But there are many loops and side things and recursive paths. But the nutshell version is I went from a little kid who was playing his guitar in his bedroom with his door closed for my childhood, kind of watching people and a little guidance from a cousin. My parents would try to listen on the stairs to hear what I was doing. But music as a means of expressing, as having a voice in the world, was like from early on. I really connected with it. Then did it just as kind of a, you know, personal expression and hobby and in college, sang in little coffee houses and things and started writing songs at the end of high school. But went into the field of education for many years and social service work. Then I was well into my career as an academic person at the University of New Hampshire. And I had an opportunity to leave my job and to tour internationally with a Canadian singer-songwriter. And we had become friends, and he appreciated my music. And anyway, with my wife's blessing, I left my work and went away. And at the end of 2006, I just started touring with, how old was I then? I was 50, 51, my first international touring as a singer-songwriter accompanist. And that went on for 5 years. I came off the road from that, kind of a little burnt out, even though it was an amazing journey. And unsure of my identity, I'd left education. I was, you know, this strange professional guy who went off and just left for 5 years and toured. And I became this is a much longer story, but the short version is a friend of mine asked me if I'd ever thought of becoming a chaplain. And so I investigated and became a chaplain, discovered Music for Healing and Transition program, you know, close to the same time. And started taking some of those units where I got to meet you in Virginia, I believe. And so I'm still giving a long story, but that's kind of those are the big stepping stones, was this music as just a kind of a natural expression. And then eventually it became this strange career opportunity, such as you call it. You know, it was a very difficult way to make dollars, but it was an amazing experience to travel around. And then chaplaincy, with the combination of chaplaincy entering the picture and my mostly awareness of self and my own spiritual journey and interfaith practice, became a pastor in there shortly after being ordained as a chaplain. And I just, music went from this thing that where I had this period of trying to promote myself as a singer-songwriter and to more just using music in everything I do. From I work with people living with brain injury and have songwriting classes and creative expression classes. And I use it in interfaith service. I use it in hospice work. Instead of a driving career in professional music, music has just become part of my daily voice in everything I do. That's a long-winded...
It's not. It's okay. It's a beautiful explanation. It's the perfect answer.
Oh, well. Hey, I'll accept that. Thank you, Chico. Thank you. Thank you. It's what I got anyway. I really appreciate the chance to talk about it and the whole reason behind your podcast. So
it ties in very strongly with the song that we worked on together.
Yes.
And I think it really helps to balance out that, you know, understanding and people sharing their own journeys to see, as you said, no path is straight.
Yeah.
And some of these paths that, you know, I was talking to someone yesterday whose path was really quite horrendous, but he's come out the other side saying, I survived this and you can too. And I think,
yeah,
and you can survive it with great joy.
I absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
As you know, there's a power to music of just connecting people.
Yes.
Physically through these waves, these, you know, these arcs and circles of waves that connect us body to body and spirit to spirit, that it's just an amazingly powerful gift and tool for building community and healing and so many things. So I'm kind of taken with that power and that opportunity to use that power for good, that superpower for good in the world, you know. And I'm also, I say part of my work, especially with the folks living with brain injury, is to not just emanate, well, it's not a just, it's an important thing to emanate this music out to people with messages that can connect us heart to heart and mind to mind, but to also help people get on board that, the expression of that, to learn that they can write a song. I love songwriting classes, especially for people who've never composed anything before, to give them a chance to see how accessible that can be. That's part of my regular practice, is songwriting classes with people that I work with. Everything from 6-word songs to longer works. Actually, I offer to anybody. So, you know, we do sometimes in our, I'm a Unitarian Universalist pastor. So it's, you know, we have people of all faiths and no faiths, you know, gathering together around just common principles of compassion and justice. And so we'll write a song on the spot, or we'll write songs in group. So I do use it with folks living with brain injury, but I just love people getting to play and explore songwriting as a medium for their expression of whatever they want to express. So for anybody, yeah, that's a big part of what I love to do. There's so many people who have been shut down from music as a means of expression from the earliest of years, when they were told that they can't carry a tune, or they, you know, they're not good enough, they're not talented enough with this and that. And so many of those early lessons that people get in life become self-fulfilling, right? If you believe that you can't sing when you're, somebody tells you that when you're 6, then for many people just stop trying to sing, right? And they don't learn how to match pitches. They don't learn how to sing because they believe that they can't sing. I've done a bunch of creative expression workshops where I invite people to look at the stories of openings and closings in their lives, whatever they care to share, as shallow or as deep as they care to go. But so many people have stories from early in their lives of somebody telling, someone of power is telling them that they can't do something, or they're not good at something. And then that kind of sets them on a trajectory of limitation, you know. So one of my missions, one of my several missions in life, is to give people a chance to rediscover what they're capable of and what they're entitled to as far as expressing music in the world.
I think that's fantastic. Do you think you could give us a sample of sort of, or how would you sort of start a songwriting session?
Yeah, I'll give you an example of one from one of my classes. This was a day we had, I think 10 people came to the class. This is at Krempel Center for people living with brain injury. So this was, it's an elective class. At the community meeting, I mentioned I was going to be doing a songwriting class. 10 people came to the class. We had 50 minutes and we made 10 songs. We made 10 little songs. Yeah. And we're not writing songs to publish and try to get royalties on. These are songs to express ourselves. So one of them, I remember clearly, I gave these black and white photograph prompts to everybody just to see if they got an idea. And one person who actually asked me to use her name, her Brenda is her first name. She looked at a picture that I had of a, like a standard poodle driving a Volkswagen Bug. It was a black and white picture from like 1963 or something. And there's a poodle behind the wheel of a Volkswagen Bug. And I thought she was going to say something about a dog or the silliness of it, but she was taken with the Volkswagen Bug because that was the last car that she owned when she could still drive before her, the changes in her life made it so she's no longer able to drive. And she would drive that Volkswagen down to the beach and watch the sunrise. So she came up with these words: my Volkswagen was my favorite car. I drove it lots of times real far. I drove it to the east and west, but driving to the beach, I like the best. That's the whole song. But let me just do, if I may, just do a bit. My Volkswagen was my favorite car. I drove it lots of times real far. I drove it to the east and west. But driving to the beach, I like the best. My Volkswagen. My Volkswagen. And it goes on for ages. The crowd around us, around her, would be singing "My Volkswagen" over and over again. It's this little song that says something profound about her life and reconnects her with the spiritual opportunity of seeing a sunrise from her car on a beach. Like it kind of rekindles that for her. She was so proud of that, and so proud that I told her I would sing. I'd do concerts in different places in different parts of the world, and sometimes I would just tell that story about that song, and people would sing it together.
It's a great song. And just like you said, the way I describe it, it connected her back to her whole self.
Yes.
That's sort of what we say in MHT, the whole of her, not just, this is where I am and it's this loss, but no,
yeah,
this is still there. This is part of me. So yeah.
Exactly. So we composed dozens and dozens of songs like that. And some of them just stick in my memory more than others. Anyway, it's joyful. It's joyful to see people come up with that together. And the melody comes from someone in the class just said, "Can somebody give us a few notes? Some courageous person, just hum a few notes." And it just builds from that live in the moment,
I love this idea that you're also creating in community. You're not doing this in isolation, and that you're sharing each other's ideas and something that you're all creating on the same space.
Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah. It's one of the most joyful things I get to do in this crazy quilt of a life that I've kind of come to.
We reconnected during the pandemic, and part of that had to do with the fact that we were all locked away in our bubbles. But even though we are supposedly out of that period of the pandemic, do you feel that it's important to keep the virtual option open?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Out of necessity, many of us turned to it, right? We had no choice when the in-person things closed up. And now, as teacher and facilitator and as pastor and chaplain, I can't imagine going back from using these things. It's not easy to for example, on a Sunday service in our church, I have a smattering. It's a very small community, but I have people in front of me in the pews in a traditional church setting, and I have a laptop to my left and a webcam in front of me on a tripod, and I'm talking to the webcam as if it's another person sitting in the sanctuary, and occasionally specifically welcoming them. And it's not smooth and clean, and it's sometimes hard to stay present with everybody, to be mindful of staying present with people who are on the other side of a camera somewhere. And then these live beings right in front of my face, in the space. So I think because we can do this, that I, for myself anyway, I don't feel like abandoning all the people who can't physically come to where this thing is. Nobody could before, so we had to go online. But now there are people who need some support, who do not have the option of coming in person. And so we're trying to keep it all, many of us are trying to keep it all going, the in-person stuff as well as the online stuff. Yeah.
I wonder about the whole Zoom and online experience during and after the initial shutdown. While there was a loss of in-person participation, there was a sense of reaching a new audience, or in your case, a new group of congregants who under normal conditions would not have searched and found you. It also makes me wonder if you've considered offering some of your songwriting workshops in an online format like Zoom.
It's absolutely true. So we've had, I've had a couple people from British Columbia attend a church service in New Hampshire, occasionally not live in real time, but Australia, or there are people who can see sometimes live and sometimes just recorded. But you're right, it reached different people in a somewhat different way. So yes, it's very important for me to connect. And I like that you raise an interesting thing. Could I do such a workshop? Of course, I could do such a workshop online with the songwriting. One of my favorite things to do, it's not music per se, but it's a though we do spontaneously do some music, I do an improv class as well. So I love improv work on Zoom. And occasionally part of the improv is us making up little songs
together. You've done so many different things. Tell me a little bit. You did a project with the with Pluto.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Tell me.
Yeah. I could not have dreamed up some of these things that have just shown up, these kind of doorways. So, yes, let's see. Let's do a short version on that. Christine Lavin. Do you know Christine Lavin? She's a folk singer. She's a wonderful person and also serves as a mentor to many other artists. Well, she got in touch with me and said that a NASA project, the New Horizons mission to Pluto, was going to use a song of hers about Pluto. And then they realized that the message wasn't the right message. And she said, well, I'm not going to change my song and I don't have another song, but I know somebody who might be able to write a song. So she got in touch with me and said, NASA's looking for a Pluto song. So I'm going, what the heck? What is that? Anyway, long story short, I said, I better take a crack at this. I mean, how could I not? And I dragged my feet. And finally she said, oh, they're ready for the song. And I go, okay, give me. And I was actually in Florida, actually on a trip with my wife. And I sat down on the bed of the condominium we were staying at. Something came to me, as it sometimes happens. It seems like it's an immediate, instant thing, but it's really not. It's my brain churning over weeks and weeks sometimes. And that window opened, and I got this little song called "Oh Pluto." It's called "Oh Pluto," of all things. But it's kind of about the wonder in human nature when the best of us comes to the forefront, when our curiosity and our cleverness and our creativity come together around something that's important to us. So anyway, that's that. And Christine Lavin came up with the idea. She's so creative. She said, you got to make a video and we got to get people talking to Pluto, saying hi to Pluto, because this craft was going up. The New Horizons craft was going up to take pictures of Pluto, the first time we've ever sent anything for that. So she and I both collected people saying hello to Pluto and giving good messages to Pluto. And then that became the video for this song. Long story, the Pluto folks loved it, especially the chief investigator, Alan Stern, really took to it and invited us down to the event at Johns Hopkins, the big flyby event where they were actually going to have the live transmissions from the craft. So we were there, my wife and I, and we picked up Christine Lavin in New York and drove down to Johns Hopkins in Maryland for this big event, and I presented the song. Actually, they presented the video to the entire group. So it was cool. Stephen Hawking called in. Bill Nye, the science guy, was there. David Blaine, the magician, was there. It was this amazing thing. But this little folk singer guy got that opportunity. There was a second mission. Once the Pluto was passed, this craft was already out there, already going. They sent it off to this this piece of rock called Ultima Thule in the Kuiper Belt, like well beyond Pluto. And they got amazing pictures of that. So they asked me to do a second song. And I did another song about amazement. And then the NASA people, or the people on this mission, all made a song video with me singing. They all sang the song, including the amazing woman who did all the mathematics for the trajectory stuff. Like all these people from the mission were standing there singing this song with me. It was just kind of amazing, if I may say. I mean, same with me becoming a chaplain and a pastor. And I just go about living my life. And just these things, these opportunities arose. The closer I got to just expressing my true self and to doing what I feel called to do has just given me some amazing opportunities to connect with people.
There's an expression that another guest and I came up with. It was called keeping the kitchen doors open. And I think that definitely describes your situation, because a lot of people, when you reach my age, think that this is it and there's nothing left to learn. I just might as well, be happy the way things are. But what kind of encouragement can you give some of our listeners who may be just starting out thinking about, what else is there?
I think that if there's something in you that you have sparks around, meaning that, and it may be something you never got to try, it could be photography, it could be playing the violin, it could be a bongo drums or a harmonica, or just, or some craft, origami, whatever it may be, that you can reconnect or spark up some of these things that might bring you joy that you didn't have opportunities for, maybe that you thought you were incapable of. But just to have a gentle introduction to some of these things that may well bring you joy. And I am, it's cliche, but I believe in this, it's never too late to find something joyful that you haven't had a chance to sit with. So that's part of it for me. Just find something to discover that just might bring you joy. And the other thing that I try to do is surround yourself with people who can bring hope and joy, and because that's contagious, right? The more we can, and we can't always do that, and our lives are not always filled with hope and joy, neither is mine. But there are people who kind of emanate that, and I try to more and more to be around those people and to be one of those people, you know, for others.
So other than creating this virtual online course in creative songwriting, do you have any future things on your wish list, things that you'd like to do?
The answer is yes. I'm trying to remember how old I am.
You're ageless.
I'm going to be a December 7th, 55. I'm 66, about to be 67, okay, on December 7th. So I think I'm always going to be on a mission. I think that's good for me to always have a mission. So the things that I've got a lot more songs to write. I like this idea, Chico, of an online songwriting thing. I'd like to offer to improv more broadly. I've seen such changes in people's lives. And the creation of music, improving with music is a part of that as well. It can do a lot of great things for people. So I'd like to do more projects around that. I'd like to tour in a different way than, you know, maybe connect with a bunch of Unitarian Universalist communities or spiritual communities that are open to different beliefs and to share messages and music, you know, and maybe travel around maybe with my wife Liz and our camper and kind of do that across the country to not just give a standard folk concert, which is a beautiful thing, but to be able, you know, to talk about hopeful things or not preach religion to people, but to offer up hope and compassion through song and words. So that's in there. I want to have a mission all the time. As long as I can communicate and breathe, I think I'll be on some kind of a mission.
For me, what's really special about the idea of songwriting is this marriage between music and words. But I always see it sort of like as a separate thing. Whereas, is it more integrated for you? Do these things happen? Like, for instance, a lot of my favorite songwriters, like Joni Mitchell, I would say she's a poet first. And then, you know, out of this comes this incredible music. But is it something that happens separately or simultaneously for you?
Yeah, the answer is all of that. You know, sometimes, I craft a bunch of instrumental pieces, and I think I sent you one. You may be able to share at some point. So I'm composing, you know, what I call fiddle tunes and guitar instrumental pieces and little piano things. I'm just because there's a great value to instrumental works that I think have a lot of use to people that don't have words, because people can put their own meaning into them more easily than something that has a set of lyrics to it. So there's that. And then I will write some words or think of an idea. Often the words and the melody come together at the same time. I don't have one process for all that. I do love working, for example, doing workshops with somebody with 6-word songs. There's some amazing 6-word songs you can come up with. But you just get people to think about with prompts or without prompts, give them a topic or an idea or show pictures and invite them to come up with 6 words.
Intrigued by the idea of an online workshop on songwriting, Craig demonstrated how a session would go, prompting me to choose 5 words, which, of course, were mission artist, resilience, joy, and hope.
Mission artist, resilience, joy, and hope. Mission artist, resilience, joy, and hope. That's way too simple and too cliche, but that's as quick as it goes. That's a six-word song, and it's no more fancy or amazing than that. It's just coming up with something and doing it together, and then everybody sings it together, and then we do another one. Just to prove accessibility, you know, nothing more than that's a song, right? You said words paired with music. So words flying on a melody, and that's a song. It's not always a neat and tidy and quick process, but thanks for doing that live, because that's exactly what it is. Just that, without any forethought, without any planning.
It really is perfect.
Just do it. All right. Well,
so I do have a request from my sister that she, you know, she's always looking for, you know, ways to help her relax and sleep. And so I know that's part of what we do as certified music practitioners. Is there a little noodling that you could do for us, that especially if we have listeners that are pretty stressed out right now with everything going on? I'm keeping you busy, Craig.
Let's see.
Definitely made me feel a lot better too.
Oh, good. That's a little instrument called a tenor guitar. Looks like a big ukulele with steel strings, but a music sale was liquidating, unfortunately, near me, one that'd been there for 40 years, and it was on the wall. And I said, let's see what that does. So I just really encourage people, if they can gain access to an instrument, you know, with the permission of the instrument owner and the guidance, is to try anything. Try anything. I love it when people get a chance to see up close what an instrument is. What does it look like? What's it look like inside the sound hole? What's down in there? How many strings, and how are the strings tightened, and what is, how heavy is it? And because these things are often off limits and inaccessible to so many folks. And there are so many instruments, so many, many instruments that one can play and have instant success that sound absolutely gorgeous, whether they be marimbas or xylophones or drums of different types. And
this is Craig's instrumental petting zoo, as we call it.
I'm holding up this is a metal. It looks like a little flying saucer made out of steel. It's actually made from propane tanks, this, but it just... It just has very pleasing, pleasing tones, and you can't make a wrong note on it. So, and there are so many instruments like this that people would not necessarily have heard of, but they're just so
just even to have it resting against your body and playing the vibrations from it.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah,
exactly. I encourage people when they can to go back to kindergarten, if they know what kindergarten was. Not everybody does, but just if they've had it, this time of where the world was full of possibility and things weren't so closed off from us, where you could say, I wonder what that's like. I wonder what that sounds like. I wonder what it feels like to try that, and to just discover and explore. Way late in life, people can discover joy through such a process.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Mission Artist and for being with us on our first season. We'll be taking a summer hiatus to do some catch-up and gather more interviews, but keep your eyes and ears out for a special episode or more this summer. In the meantime, stay safe in your travels or in situ. We'll send you off with Craig's original song, Things That Bring Hope, which you can hear in its full glory on his Bandcamp webpage, which we will post on our website, missionartist.org.
Good people gathering differently, doing their best with such difficulty, and the kindness and wisdom folks shine out to me. These are some things that bring hope. The hum of the helpers committing their lives in service to others, their hearts open wide. The music we sway to, divine reverie. Oh, these are some things that bring hope to me. These are some things that bring hope. These are some things that bring hope. These are some things that bring hope to me.